Wow. All right, let us all arrive. And I will let people in. You can just relax and release and become present. And allow us to just take a few deep breaths together. Letting go of the outside world. And let us connect with our own inner world. Noticing, connecting, arriving, loving. Hello, me. Hello, hello, me. Hi. Just noticing all the sensations of your body. And arriving at awareness. How am I doing? What's going on in me? And without wanting to change anything, just become a gentle, kind observer of goings on inside of you. And as usual, I invite you to remember in this moment, you have nothing to do and nowhere to go except to be here. In this moment, you are safe. And there are no problems. In this moment, you can relax into your breathing and allow your breath to be a cleanser of your inner world. So as you take your breath through your nostrils and as it moves through your throat, into your lungs, and deep into your belly, allow it to sweep all that it finds unhelpful. We normally underuse the cleansing properties of each breath and each moment. Relaxing and releasing. Nothing to do and nowhere to go. What an amazing, magical thing this breath is. If you're curious about your breath, I want you to just gently follow it like a good friend. Just go with it. Wherever it goes, your attention goes. This breath of ours connects all of us. Your in-breath is my out-breath, and my out-breath goes to the world. As the world's out-breath arrives in my body. The air we share, the breath we take. What if each breath had information for us? We're just going to be playful and play together in this meditation. Imagine the breath, the next breath that are you going to take has come all the way from around the world, around the globe. Out of all the breaths that you can take, is this one that has come for you? Invite it in with awareness. Ask your breath, what souvenir have you brought for me? Where have you come from? What was your last experience before you arrived in my body? Isn't that fascinating? Each breath comes with information and experience. Whose out breath am I taking in? And what souvenir this breath has for me? And sometimes it's just a word, just a vision, an image, a color, a shape. Just play with that. Let's see what next breath brings you. It's just like when the kids play with balloons, different colors, different shapes. They play with them. They press them down. They throw them out into the air. Just play with your breath. Be aware of your breath. Get curious around your breath. Where have you come from? I wonder. Let's wonder together using our breaths. You can become even more intentional. You can imagine this breath was the breath that a kind, compassionate, wise person was breathing. You can imagine whoever, with body or without body, somebody that you know or you know of. Like, I wonder if this breath was also in the body of Rumi. What information, what wisdom, what knowing can it give me? What if by breathing this particular breath, I too could connect to my inner wisdom? What if this breath was the breath of the most grounded person ever lived? How grounded can I feel as I take in their breath? What an amazing experience to have as we can choose and imagine breathing the breath of any person we choose. We can get access to their wisdom, their groundedness, their kindness, their knowing, their knowledge. Their pains, their happiness, their smiles, their tears. What if the breath was the cleansing mechanism, teaching mechanism, connecting tool? What if breath was what kept us alive and wise and kind and knowing? Oh, maybe it is. What if every time I got lost in my decisions and in my anger, could just take a breath and say, breath, please support me, inform me, educate me, tell me. Befriending our breath, one breath at a time, and allowing each breath to be our helper, our friend, our teacher, our connector. When we can ask each breath, tell me that which you have come to tell me. Or we can specifically ask it what we want from it. Can you find me the breath of the most, name it, compassionate person? I need compassion right now and I can't find it. I need wisdom right now, and I just, it's far away. Can you gift me and connect me? What a playful, fascinating idea of using our breath in any given moment to connect to the energy, to the state of being that is needed. But you see, for that to take place, you need to know what you need. You need to be aware and present. I have no capacity in this moment. I can't find my words. I'm not connected to my kindness. So I'm going to ask my next breath to gift me with that which I'm seeking. Your job is to identify what you're seeking. And then the job of your breath is to gift that to you. So the question becomes, what do I need right now? And as soon as you identify that, just leave it to your next breath to bring it to you. With that, I invite you to bring your awareness to this moment and ask yourself, what do I need in this moment? And then watch it to be offered to you by your breath. Us back. Let's see. Good to see everyone. I know I had invited you to review class, I think lesson 3. But I also want you to bring any questions that is alive for you. My invitation to all of you is to see if we can take the questions and hopefully answers to a bit higher level. And I don't know what that even means when I say that. What does higher level mean? What I mean is, I experience the world as really going fast. I experience the world purging, earth purging. And I feel like if we just intended, just simple as that, to just take it one step closer to elevation, we may have come across, you know, something different and something a bit higher than what we normally have, just beyond every day. But then every day take us to there too. So I don't want you to stop talking about every day. I was telling the co-hosts of our group, Nikki, Chris, and Carlota, that I really loved what Nikki shared. And I don't know if you are all part of the WhatsApp group. She was talking about a child who was in a session and she was painting. And when the session finished, an adult said she had painted a mushroom, but it was out of proportion. Mushroom was too big. And the adult said that mushrooms are not that big. And that really went to my heart. And I realized that, you know, when we talk about institutions, you know, lesson one, that how their job is to basically destroy any sense of imagination in us. That was so true. Institutions and families and adults, especially trained and expert adults, by the way, are taught to destroy that in us. So bring us back to earth. Don't be silly. Mushrooms are not that big, which is really, if you think about what that is in essence is stop imagining. Stop going beyond what is in front of you. Mushrooms need to be this size. And if you do it any other size, you are wrong. So that just kills the imaginative aspect of us as children. And sounds like, you know, not a problem until it's a problem. And the problem is then when I need to go to my imagination, then when I need to create, I don't have access to that imagination. I haven't practiced it. They train us to be copiers, not creators, because copiers are so easy to manipulate. If I know you want to be like your next door neighbor, I can manipulate you with no problem. But if I think you are a creator and you will only do things that are right for you, well, why would I know? How would I know how I can manipulate you and contain you? So please, that was a beautiful story, and that's a very telling story. My question to you is, who has told you mushrooms are too big? That's just too big of a mushroom. Bring it back to size, you silly person. Don't be silly. Be realistic. So that's my question. Let's see. Who wants to share? Who wants to talk? I've talked already too much. Carlota, go ahead.
I'm going to keep it short because that's very close to my heart, as I already replied in the group for Nikki with my kids. But it's funny, I was replying on the group about I feel like I'm the imagination keeper for my kids. But just immediately after sharing that the next day, I found myself talking to somebody very close, well, to my partner, about, hey, it's long that we don't sit and imagine where we want to be and how we want to live. And he said, oh yeah. I said, last time we did that, it was a long time ago and lots of things have changed. So I wish we can get one of those. And I started like, for example, and I put an example and he's like, oh, wait. But it depends of the job offer and the budget. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. I'm talking about imagining where I want to be and how I want to live with you. And I would love to do this exercise with you. And he's like, yeah, sure. And I start again. And he starts again. I was like, with all these like settings. And I'm like, wait a second. When a little kid, and I went into Nikki's example, like when a little kid, and I remember me, myself, drawing my dream house when I was little, I would have tons of drawings about it, like with like slides that go from a balcony to a pool and this crazy setup of a house. Like no one told me you cannot draw that. This house doesn't exist because I was doing it in my own bedroom on myself with my imagination. Like, would you now tell your kids you cannot draw this kind of house? And he was like, no, I wouldn't tell them. Then don't do it to me. I'm trying to be a kid drawing my dream house at 40 and like my dream plan. And I want to do it with you. Do you want to play with me? Like, let me play and don't come with all these parameters that we have around that limit us. Because, and I told him, like, because if I don't go wild and dream about it, then I have no North Star. I want to have my North Star, and then let's see where life takes us. But let me imagine that. So yeah, it came a little bit all tied with this.
Thank you, Carlota. Yeah, the realistic problem is really a big problem. Yeah, be realistic. Meaning do not go beyond what is. You see, imagination is what can be. Realistic is what is. So just stay with this. Like there's a box, stay in the box. Do not go out. So
that
thank
was
you.
his message. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, there is this budget and there is these places. I'm like, no, 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 no. Let me dream beyond, because you don't know where we can get if we dream beyond.
True. Thank you. Yes, Kristen.
When through the meditation today with the breath, I was really felt very comforting, kind of like a balm, and like was able to kind of release some fears and connect. And I've been struggling with supporting my daughter through her college decision and her I would say primarily that. And when you ask the question of like, who has told you like what mushrooms are too big, I remember thinking about my, when I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go to school or what I wanted to major in school, my dad was very much telling me my mushrooms were too big. He wanted me to take an economics class and I wanted to take an anthropology class, and we were at odds and he got very upset. And through this process, I keep finding myself feeling like I'm becoming my dad with my daughter, where I'm scared about a lot of different things for her, and looking at a lot of big mushrooms and being critical of them. There's tons of enormous mushrooms. And, you know, she got into a school that she said was her dream school, McGill in Canada. And we had no idea, because she had never talked about it, and it being a dream school. Or what was it about it that was dreamy? And, you know, I think she really is in that imagination place about it, which made me feel really scared and critical, because it doesn't have all the X and the Y and the Z, or we don't know if it has all the X and the Y and the Z, because at this point it is a dream because of the way it looks, to her. And so, yeah, I just really relate to that. And I'm still struggling with too big mushrooms.
Great observation. Do you know why we end up being like the parents that we criticized one day? Because of realistic world that they invite us to go to. So that's what realistic world is. Realistic world is the world that we have made real based mostly on our fears. Since we share our fears with our family members, then we end up being like our parents. So the very parents that we stood there and objected to and argued with, or at least in our heads, if we didn't have permission to do it in person. But that's the problem. So real worlds are based on limitations and fears. And then fears are different fears. Like, you know, this group may fear this, that group fears that. But then our shared fears are usually with our family or with our tribe, or later when we grow older, with our community. So the difference between tribe and community basically is tribe is the world we were born into. Community is the one we choose. So very interesting that that's what realistic world is. And if you look at what happens when real changes, is that one person or one group goes beyond real and creates something new. Like anything that we have, like this Zoom, somebody went beyond real and said, what if we could meet, you know, online like this? And then Zoom was born. So we use it once one person has gone there, but we still stop them, our children, from, or our loved ones, not necessarily our children, family members. That makes no sense. Just think about what that means when we say that. That makes no sense. What are senses? Five senses. Meaning if I can't see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, you know, it shouldn't happen. It's not good because I can't do these things, comprehend them, fathom them with the five senses. And five senses are very, very limited. What if I can't see it with my eyes, but I can see it with my mind's eyes? Well, there's one eye there only. But anyways, yeah, that's why we sound like our parents, the very parents that we subjected. I mean, by the way, McGill is a wonderful university. I worked with it when I was in Canada, and it's one of the most regarded universities in the world. So just FYI. I know you never heard of it because it's in Canada. And, you know, we're planning to take them over anyway. So soon that might be a problem. So that's good. All right. Let's see. I just couldn't let that one go. Sorry, I tried. I just could not. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, Nikki, your story that you shared really hit pretty hard with me, and I shared it with quite a few people, and everyone was just appalled at what we call the creativity crusher in that story. But it did bring up for me this memory of, and this ties into lesson three, as a child. Until I started going to school, life felt very abundant. And then as soon as life shifted towards school and getting good grades, figuring out what you need to be career-wise, making it onto the team, being one of the best on the field, life started to feel like accumulation. And it made me realize that that's just the way that this world we live in is oriented. It's oriented toward accumulation equating to success. And, you know, as an adult now, I find myself trying to shed these tendencies to accumulate because I know abundance is where it's at. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Well said and well put. Thank you. Yes. Fascinating world. Yes. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. First of all, I feel a little bit out of sync because I haven't been going to a lot of the meetings and stuff. So I don't remember exactly what lesson three was, and I joined the guided meditation late. However, everything that's been said fits really amazingly or builds on this three-day pedagogical conference I was at. And it was about the pedagogy of care. And it was about reimagining assessment. But there was so much research about how even applying something we really take for granted, like grades. And then this was specifically, you know, starting in K-12. I'm in post-secondary. I'm in Canada, by the way. So as your token Canadian, you know, happy to join or resist as the case may be. Assessment itself, I guess that's a form of judging, but just how harmful the institutionalized assessment of children is and how it sets up an extrinsic reward and punishment system. And by the way, this is fairly radical, even though these ideas have been around for 2.5 decades. The ungrading thing is what I'm referring to. But I spent 3 days studying this, looking at research, looking at evidence of, evidence to the senses. I think that what Mitra is talking about is much deeper even than that. But even from a sort of scientific sensual based approach, any informed person would see that this type of assessment is dampening of the human spirit. And So I think all that means is that we probably have to be a little bit easy on ourselves from having been subjected to it. Number one, we probably have to be a bit of a rebel against it somehow, and maybe in small steps with ourselves and our children and our grandchildren. And that it's a good path, to challenge the way we judge and assess others, and that it's sort of, baked into our institutions. It's hard to get away from it. It's reinforced over and over again from a very early age.
Yes,
Anyway.
thank you, Stephen. The whole institution is based on that. And there are keepers of those institutions and those systems. And I don't know if all of them know. I don't think, teachers necessarily know what they're doing. They just continue what they have been taught. But it is really frightening. The only thing, I mean, I'm talking personally right now. I think what I did as a child, when Chris said when you went to school, how you felt, I created two worlds. There was a inner world that it was secret, nobody knew about. I called it God, but I don't think I really knew what God was. I was always talking to God. And then it was the world, then it was world outside of me. But I think the way I kept it for me as a very personal thing was as a child, and then later as an adult, I kept a world, a conversation, ongoing conversation inside of me. And I was very protective of that world. And that's how I kept part of my imagination. I'm sure, there was so much better I could do, but I just didn't have the facilities. But there was this world, there was an inner world that was my secret world that nobody knew about. And I was very protective of it, extremely. And I remember a few times my grandmother found me, caught me, I suppose that's a word, that I was, connecting with that world. And it became a very interesting point to see her reaction. And that was very informative for me too. One of them I remember vividly, that I had this idea that when the weather is really, troublesome, that's when I can meet God. And it was thunderstorm happening in Tehran, back in Iran. And I went to that roof and I was waiting, to meet, God. And I remember that they couldn't find me. So my grandmother looked everywhere and they found me on the roof. And she opened the door and she said, "What are you doing?" I'm soaking wet. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "No, no, no, go." I had to be alone and the weather needed to be that. I don't know where I got that from, probably my imagination. And she really wanted to know what was happening. And I said, "No, grandma, please leave. If you stay, he won't come," which of course made her so worried that there's a he coming to meet me on the roof and I'm waiting for him. Long story short, what happened was her reaction was just so soft. It was so beautiful that I got lucky that out of all people around me, she probably was the only one that would have, responded like that and didn't react. And she said, no, that's beautiful. That I thought, do you think I'm crazy that I talk to God?" She said, "No, that's beautiful, actually." She kissed my head. She always did that. And she said, "No, that's wonderful. Continue talking to God." From time to time, she would get worried and ask me, like, "Does God talk back to you?" Because she thought maybe I'm just hearing voices. And I said, "No, but I know what he wants to say." And I think these are such important parts of childhood. Had she gone like crazy on me and said, like, "What are you doing? Are you out of your mind? God is not that. Come and pray and go on your knees," I probably would have felt and experienced life very differently. Just that one incident. It's just like that mushroom, that incident, because we see adults as people in power, as decision makers, when we were a little kid, and that becomes so important point of reference for us. So yeah, it's a sad story, but I think we're going through a time of history, not just our life history, that everything is getting being questioned. I mean, I see really, really amazingly gifted young people. I talked to one last week and I asked him what he wants to study. He said, I do not wish to study in institutions. He used that word and he's not familiar with my job, with my course. I said, really? He said, no, I have selected things that I want to study. He actually created his own thing and he's going through it. And I thought, like, wow, he's 17, I think. And I think that's a beginning when we can't push them to go and become, you know, we have selected professions that are of importance depending on cultural and geographical place that we're in. We say this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is higher, this is lower. So it's time for that. I mean, they called it YouTube University. They call it, you know, that you can learn anything online with $19 or for free. So I hope that happens. I really am hoping for a time that education is very, very different than what it is now. That's my hope. All right, somebody else. Nikki, go ahead.
The meditation, of course, I go to another world. The word peace came to me. And then finally, when you said, just like find one breath from around the world, when you said that, all of a sudden I saw this Tibetan monk sitting in like a forest meditating. And then the things, of course, I've got to write down the things that come to me. It said, peace is the quiet in your breath. We can't touch it. We can feel it. Breath is peace in its raw form. Feel the breath of your heart, pure, cleansing. It is energy to our soul. It is the quiet of the breath that leaves with our soul. That's what I came to me.
Very poetic. How did you feel?
I felt so at peace. It just this peace came over me because I've been feeling a little anxious, I guess. And so this peace just kind of came over me when, you know, and I just felt those words and just accepted them.
Isn't that fascinating? We can choose whose breath do I want to breathe right now? Isn't that amazing? Once we go beyond our grandfathers, of course, and grandmothers and all the people that we love, like we go beyond that, I can choose to breathe in the breath of, you know, the Buddhist monk that you said, or Shakespeare or Einstein, or, you know, somebody that connects me to that world. It's just amazing. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you.
Did you choose or did it come to you?
No, that's what came to
Okay.
me.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it was just all of a sudden I was just like pulled right there to this monk sitting meditating. So I wasn't even thinking about a monk or anything like that. I just knew the word was peace, and it was like I was just boom, he was there. And that
Wow.
whole scene was there. Yeah.
That's amazing. So sometimes it's like a guest with this
Yeah.
practice. You can invite a particular person, or sometimes it's a exciting uninvited guest that knocks at your door. I know it doesn't happen in the Western world, but where I grew up, that happened a lot. We would be just sitting and having lunch or doing something, and you know, a friend from far will come and say hi, and they're just, oh, come on in. So it's just like that. You know, you just invited friends or beautiful uninvited friends that surprises you. Thank you. Let's see. Carlota.
It's just a little thing. And Jennifer, I saw Jennifer raising her hand. So it's just that talking about God and kids, there is this story of this little girl under 7 in a Waldorf school that was drawing. And I heard it. And then the teacher came and said, wow. She saw her so invested. So she was like, what are you drawing? And the girl answered, I'm drawing God's face. And then the teacher said, no one knows how God looks like. And she's like, oh, they will in a minute. I just love that story. It's like the mushroom. I think when they are under seven, they are still so connected to their truth that they don't even doubt. So I just wanted to share that. This assertiveness. Oh, they will in a
minute. Once I inform them, they will know. That was a good one. Yeah. Thank you, Carlota. Yes, Jennifer.
Yeah, hi everyone. So I think this discussion about like the real world and imagination is resonating me with lesson three. So with the questions that you asked at the end, one of them was, what about my action? Is what I'm doing what I want to do? And I'm really struggling with that because I'm going to be asking these questions when I'm at work. And do I really want to be working? The answer is no, but that's the real world. And I don't know how to like reframe that question because I can't get out of work. I didn't win the lotto, you know, like you have to work to survive. So should I be wording it kind of like, is what I'm doing what I am intending to be doing, or what I'm doing is important or it's needed? I don't know how to word that because the want piece to me means fun and exciting, and work's not always fun and exciting.
Yeah, great question. What I would do if I were you, I would ask, what would I want to do beyond and beside how I earn my money? Because it just doesn't mean, I mean, sometimes what we do is what we love, and also we earn our living. Sometimes they're different. They don't need to be exactly the same. People think everybody needs to go to work because there are times in our life. I mean, I remember when my kids were younger, I mean, I had to go where I worked for some organization, which I never wanted to, but I had to because I needed health insurance. I needed this, I needed that. But here's the problem. That is fine as long as there is another thing I do that I love. It's like my secret job that you don't know about. You know, you think I'm a this and I'm a that, but you should see what I do when I go home. My famous story is about my surgeon client who we awakened that in him, and he went and started playing music. He wanted to really be a musician. And then one night we're in this jazz club with my brother and Henry, and I look at the stage and I see my client playing in this jazz club. And I'm like, I'm fixated. Everybody notices. He's like, what? Anyways, we get to talk as I go to the, going to the restroom. He comes and says, and I say, what are you doing here? He said, shh, nobody knows. He gets $200 a night to play 4, 5, 6 hours on a, like a Saturday night. But he is flying. Do you know how much he charges per surgery?
Probably runs, I don't know, he probably makes $200,000 a day. I don't know. His office is in Beverly Hills. I can just figure out the numbers. But you don't know how happy he was. So it doesn't need to be exactly how you earn your living.
That is also institutions telling us, it's like you do this, you follow the rules, and that's it. Go home and go to bed. But yeah, ask yourself, what else would I like to do? Maybe it's little knitting on the side. Maybe it's little creating on the side. Maybe it's like, you know, I don't know, painting. And there's so many things. I don't want to even say these words because there's so many things that we can do. Somebody's writing poetry. I mean, they surprised us at work with, like, it was a night, you know, it was around Christmas many years ago, and we had a company gathering, and we all were doing something that we love, we were supposed to bring. This person reads poetry, and you think, wow, I looked at him, I would have never thought he was into poetry. And he didn't know I loved poetry, and I was writing poetry. And I'm listening to this guy, and I'm thinking, you didn't tell us. He said, oh, it's something I do after hours. He has a book of poetry he brought with him. He's been writing for 20 years. That's his love. This is his spouse that he has to take care of. That is his lover. There's a difference. Sometimes they're different people. Sometimes they're same one. Sometimes the person we're married to is our lover. And sometimes there's a lover that nobody knows. So that's the question I will ask. Beside, if it's not feeding your soul, beside how I earn my living, you need to respect that too, by the way, Jennifer, because we don't want to hate what we do. Very with awareness, very consciously, I do this for a living. This all actually gives me, this is for survival. You understand the language now. That is for thriving. This is for surviving. That's how I survive. That's how I pay my mortgage and do this and pay for my this, for doing that. But I also have a lover on the side. It's a person I'm married to, and that's a person I make love to. Two different areas. And sometimes the lover is the spouse. Does that make sense, Jennifer?
Yeah, that was a good way to reframe it. So I appreciate it.
Go and find your lover. Thank you. Great question. Minu.
Hi, good morning. We had this discussion a few weeks ago, a few months ago, regarding my son whose passion was is music. So his world is the music. Last night we were at another set that he played with his friend. Everyone came at, you know, told us how talented he is, how amazing. Everyone, you know, people were dancing, enjoying themselves with the music. He has a specific music. I don't know the name, but it's a music that he plays. And exactly that's his world of imagination. That's exactly how he enjoys being there. He imagines it, and how much time he and his friend spent the past 2 weeks for this performance of last night was like out of control so many times, and they enjoyed it. It was like they were high every time they did that. And when they were on the set last night, that was one of the good things that people liked, because they were enjoying it so much. Okay, that's the part we know. I'm trying to.
When you say okay, that means you're going to real world. Okay,
exactly.
Let's go.
Okay, so obviously that's a great, amazing, fun life to have and to be. But when it comes to real world, I should not say that, but the a survivalist world where he needs to make money and he needs to support himself and all of that, he is not enjoying it as much. So he's not going to do it. So what happens if that overpowers the real life? How can you bring balance without killing that imagination or that amazing part of him or the second other life?
I'm going to say what I want to say, but you won't accept it. But let me say it.
Okay. I'm going to take notes again.
No, you won't do it. You let him decide. What do I mean? When I willingly compensate for that which my child should be doing, I am not allowing them to see what they need to do, exactly what Jennifer asked. They have to see for survival, there is an option, and for this creation, there is an option. Does he want to take it to the next step? What does that mean? Can he make his music also a way of earning living? Absolutely, Minu. You talk as if like there's no money in music. Do you know one of the most amazingly way of earning money and becoming like literally billionaire is through music? So either he needs to see the need for his talent to also bring him a way of, you know, income, or he needs to choose to have a way of earning an income while attending to his passion. Exactly what I said to Jennifer. His, you know, his life and then his lover. But if I unwillingly, and if I unwillingly, meaning I don't want to do it, I just think, okay, I should do it. If I give very clear boundaries to that, for instance, I would tell my child, I'll support you till you're whatever, pick a number, 21, 28, 34. And then after that, you are on your own, and I really mean it, and I mean it through my love. Then the person needs to go and do it. He needs to decide
if he wants to also earn his living through his passion, or he needs to go and get another job and live his passion. Because as I said, they don't need to be the same. As long as there is a passion, there is a flame happening somewhere in our heart through our passion, it doesn't matter what I do during the day. I go to work, as I said, I think it was in person class last week. Some of the most amazing philosophers and teachers of the world were people who had mundane life. They were cleaners. They were like sweeping the floors. They worked in gas stations, but they were, you know, also creating greatness. So either you accept a humble life and allow your passion to be your passion, or you learn to earn a living at the standard you want through your passion, or, so three options, or you separate the passion from earning an income. But the key to all these three options are that you, dear Minu, mommy and daddy, need to get out of the way. Because while you're standing there, he will never, ever make those choices because he's a smart. I wouldn't either. If you always cooked for me, what am I, silly to get up and clean and shop and chop and cook? Like, you know, I just come and say, Minu, you know, hungry. Can you feed me now? So that's why I said you probably won't do it. And the other thing is the standards that a community creates, and the community that you and I live in particularly, has created the standard that it's almost unsustainable by following your passion. It's just not possible. You need to get into real estate. You need to get into investment in order to have that kind of lifestyle. So there's a saying that says the highest asset is reducing your needs. I live in the same community, Minu, you know that. I partially socialize with the same community. I do not have those standards. You know, I buy secondhand clothes. You know, I go to concerts almost three times a week, but most of them are free. I listened to an amazing opera at UCLA last night. It was fascinating. We were in awe. I had tears in my eyes, but it was completely free. But the community doesn't go there because it's free. It doesn't have the, because we don't go most of the time when there is pressure to actually enjoy these things. We go to be seen. And that's a very, very different intention. I have a rich art, music, fashion, spirituality world. Most of it is free and with very little money. But it's an option. That's my option. I don't think I answered your question fully, but I think yes. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yes, thank you. He will finally make a decision on his own that the $400 last night was a lot less than what they spent for the past 2 weeks, even on food, to get together and practice. But maybe he will make a decision if he wants to make his passion his also source of income, or he will find another way, hopefully soon.
To expedite that decision, get out of the way. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Great question. Perfect time to take a break. 9:30 my time. So let's take a 5-minute break and come back. See you. So let's see if there are any insight sharing questions. Yes. Kristen and then Chris. Go ahead.
Kristen, you're muted.
Yeah, she's trying to unmute herself.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't, somehow it wasn't coming up. I appreciate you helping. Can you be a little bit more specific about how to get out of the way in those type of situations with your
You're breaking up. I assume you mean
when
with your
you're
children.
living.
Kristen, you were breaking up. I
Oh,
didn't.
sorry.
If you move,
Yes.
I can't hear you. Just.
Okay, I'll stay. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, can you be a little more specific about how to get out of the way with your loved ones? Because I think at times, like with my daughter, for example, she has said that she's wanted to develop healthier habits. And yet I don't see them happening. And so it's just like, I guess, I mean, answering my own question, I think it's a matter of asking if there's anything that I can help with. And then when the answer is no, not stepping in, but it's really hard when not seeing kind of that type of change. And yeah, I think I'm figuring out like how to balance helping and not stepping in too much.
When was the last time you wanted to change and it took a long time?
Pretty recently.
Okay. That's why it's hard for you to advise her. Because you're not showing her, you're telling her. So I'm not saying that's your fault. Please understand. I just wanted to say that because we talk to our children as if we have made it or as if we know. And we don't know and we haven't made it because we're still here as human beings. So seeing it as a process, I suppose that's what I'm saying. It's a process. That's one. Two is sometimes the best thing to say is to say nothing. But if we need to say something, I would ask instead of tell. So if my daughter came to me and said, Mom, I really want to develop a, I don't know, healthy habit about eating, I would say, oh, tell me more. Stop. What does that mean? I would love to learn from that too. I'm always trying to eat healthier. Tell me more. Silence. Instead of saying, oh, yes, I think, and do you want to do this? By the way, you shouldn't be that. I saw a series. So this is where we go wrong. So ask, what does that mean to you? Oh, it means this. Oh, tell me more. That's interesting. Like curiosity. You invite curiosity. And then at the end, the closing is, so the introduction, remember they taught us intro, body, closing? The best way to understand how to do it with your children, the intro is, oh, that is fascinating. So show some interest. I hope you have it, and then you're showing it. Two, ask them, the body is, tell me more, and let them go on. Oh, really? Questions about what they're saying. But the questions without an agenda, because when you have an agenda, some questions are like agendaful, they know. And then the closing is, how can I support you? Stop. These are the best way to do it. Intro is show interest. Body is ask them, let them tell you. Closing is, how can I help? Let them tell you. I did that with a friend of mine that we were having lunch, actually, a professional friend, meaning a friend that I met professionally. That's what I meant. And I saw that she was doing something at lunch and we had a discussion. And I made a comment enough to sort of say, I want to say something. And then I stopped. And then she asked me, she said, what did you mean when you said that? I said, I mean this. And then we said, and I said, tell me, is it important to you? She said, oh, you think I should be doing that? I said, well, what do I know should? I don't even know what I should do, let alone what you should do. But tell me more. Do you want to do this? Is it important? She said, oh, yeah. So she started talking to me. And then I said, how can I help you? Because she's a good friend. She said, let me think about that. I said, sure. And before we left the table, she said, I would like to have a reporting mechanism to you. So at the end of each day, to this day, this was a few months ago, she sends me three emojis, one for breakfast, one for lunch, one for dinner. And they're either thumbs up or thumbs down.
That's all she does. I don't answer or anything, but that reporting mechanism. And I looked at it and we had lunch again. And she said, do you have any feedback? I said, yes. She said, what? I said, the pattern is that you are worst at dinner. Everything is thumbs. I said, how do you know? I said, I looked at your thumbs. Most of the thumbs downs are dinner. She said, yeah. I said, does that mean maybe you're not eating enough for protein for lunch and then you eat heavy for dinner? She said, oh my God, yes. I said, I don't know. What do you think you can do? And she's an adult. She's asking me. She's not my daughter. And I don't have an agenda for her. And that's what helped. She said, that's what helps. It's amazing how much it has helped her. Couldn't be simpler than that. At the end of the night, I get one text from her with three emojis. That's all. Has changed her life. But I didn't tell her. I provoked it. But then she did everything else. That's your answer. Hopefully it was helpful.
Very helpful. Thank you.
And remember that we also are growing and learning. So it's not like we know it. That from that position of saying it, it's so difficult to hear. That, you know, most of the time people tell me, look at them. See what they're doing. They're telling me what to do. So even if you really have arrived at that area, it's just better to be humble and just ask instead of tell. Because they react to that, and out of the way is this, out of just disagreeing with you, you may delay their journey to health and wealth and whatever it is that you're hoping that they get. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheila. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to make a response to a couple of things that have been brought up. And most recently, Kristen, I think that our judgments, this is just something I'm learning, my judgments and my opinions are mostly institutionalized. My judgments and my opinions come from outside sources. And if I'm putting my judgment and opinions on another person, I'm telling them that they should also obey those outside sources. So I'm trying to think of this. I have no opinion and I have no judgment. I don't have an opinion about that. Opinions aren't important. Judgments are important. But listening to that person is important. And listening to myself, of course, first is super important. And what makes sense to me, and that doesn't transfer to another person. That's it's individualized. So it's the opposite of institutionalized. And so every time we want to open our mouth or even open our thought and think, well, I wonder what they're doing, or how are they going to get past that one, or how are they going to make it with the money? Or, you know, that it's just opinion and judgment. And you're taking away their opportunity to go within and find it for themselves. So that came up for me related to you, Kristen, and to me as well. We have adult children as well. And let's see, I think it was Jennifer talked about work. And this is what came to me. It sounded like there were two things. It was either survival, I'm doing it for survival, or I'm doing it for love, which would be way more elevated. But when we're in the moment of work or whatever it is, we're in the moment, we can say, what is there in this work I'm currently doing? What is there in this job that's teaching me? What's the nowness of this work that I'm doing that's actually giving me opportunity to grow and learn? Is it giving me opportunity to create better relationships with others? Or is it giving me the opportunity to button my lip more, or, be what they're, but getting in touch with the nowness of whatever we're doing, even though we're thinking, I don't know if I really like this job. And then I think the attentionist is about intention. So can I create intention in this very job that I am right now? That may not be my final landing place. I don't know. Can I create intention to be of service, to be helpful in some way? So it's getting into the nowness of what's happening, but also creating intention for that. So anyway, those are two things that came up for me.
Thank you, Sheila. Sheila took our professional coaching program and she's become a great coach. I love that. Thank you. All right. Any? Oh, yes, Chris. Sorry, I forgot. You were next.
Oh no, that's
Sorry.
okay.
Go.
Something I had an aha moment during our time together, and it's just really just goes back to something I've heard you say a lot, Mitra. In the world, but not of the world. In the world, and not, but not of the world. And it's such a interesting practice to be in that space, because so often I found myself rejecting the world. And in order to really be in the world, but not of the world, you have to be fully engaged with the world. You can't be in constant conflict with it. And I think that's a mistake that I certainly made a lot early in my years of practice, is feeling that in order to really nurture myself and to experience all of the benefits of my practice, I had to escape. There were years that I remember, I know you know, there were years where I had to fight the urge to run off to some monastery, you know? And then you spend enough time at these monasteries on retreat, and the one thing that you consistently hear from everyone there is how hard it is to live in a retreat center. And, you know, that was eye-opening for me, because I realized that right wherever you go, there you are. I mean, life is just hard. So I think that's the practice, is how do I know that I'm not of this world, but I'm still fully engaged with this world?
Good one. I think the more you believe that, the easier it is to be in the world and engage in the world, because entangled is different than engaged. Entanglement with the world comes when I forget I am just in this world, but I'm not of this world. When you remember that you are not of this world, you are really made out of the invisible world, living in the visible world, going with the language of the book, the Yekinabud, living in the Yekibud of the world, then engagement becomes possible, because I have, if I have everything to lose, I'll be entangled. But if I am observer and I am watching the world go by, and I say, okay, I like that, and I want that, oh, I want to be here, then engagement is possible. Entanglement is when I have an agenda. It's exactly what I was ta talking about parenting. Entanglement comes in when I have a very strong agenda. But if I stand out and say, their life, their world, true, I brought them to this world, or I raised them, and then it becomes a much easier engagement than entanglement. Yeah. It's actually that statement allows me. I remind myself sometimes when it's very difficult, usually in larger gatherings. I get lost in larger gatherings because there are too many energies and I see patterns, and it becomes very difficult for me to fathom all the patterns. And then it's that is just, okay, I'm holding this space. I don't need to engage with anyone, and then I want to engage. So you let go of entanglement, and then you engage. Good word that you used. Yeah.
Yeah. And last thing, I love what Sheila just said about the lessons always coming in.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a big moment in a practice is knowing that these experiences in the world are the fuel for deepening my spiritual life.
Exactly. Yeah. And I loved what Sheila also said about the job that you're holding, because, for instance, like Jennifer, there are things that you probably are not appreciating about your job. It can't be all that bad. I mean, it's a, you know, wonderful thing that you have. It's a blessing to have it. So I love that point too, Sheila, that you reminded us in any situation, when you see it as either surviving or thriving, meaning either growing or sustaining your life, there is a different relationship with it, as opposed to always complaining, like, oh, don't like this. Oh, they're just talking. It's like the question needs to change. What's in it for me? How can I grow through this? How can I benefit from this? Because we just want to get out of situations. We never want to see what is it that can feed me? So that was a great point that Sheila reminded us. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. That I didn't think about that. That's amazing. Carlota, is there anybody that hasn't asked any questions before we go to Carlota that would like to speak or ask? I get a smile from Hilda. Okay, go ahead, Carlota.
Thank you for asking, Mitra. I it's funny how I was thinking about love and the relation of love and dependence or independence. And then Chris just asked about this question and you answer with entanglement and involvement. And how I realized there was this conversation where love is nothing related to independence. Like you can be totally independent from somebody and still love them dearly, but that's something that institutions don't tell you, like family institution. Everybody is like, no, if you love somebody, you're very dependent of that one person. And that is something that it's very liberating, like what Chris just said in bigger terms, like being off the wall, like being and not being entangled. So that was one thought. I was just thinking that while Chris was posing his question. I'm like, oh my God, that's like so funny. And I had this one question I wanted to ask on top of that. Somebody sent me a picture of this frozen lake. And that was a beautiful sky. And then the frozen lake was reflecting the sky so perfectly. And I don't know, this thought came to my mind how some of us live in moments of our life or even permanently, and we keep on like going through it, like reflecting the outworld, the outer world, and being okay with it. And we were talking about with this one person how she had the sense of knowing there's more behind and that she got it and how she can tell her friend. And then somebody sent me this picture and I was like, that's such a beautiful reflection of how we go through life, like thinking we know there is more, but we're just reflecting what is outside. What it is that breaks this ice and let you realize it's ice, the nature of it, because you've been thinking it's sky all the time. And then there's this one point where you realize, oh, no, it's not sky. It's ice reflecting the sky. And then you go deep and there's these deep waters under the sky. So there is all this like ripple effect of, just one thing.
Thank
to
you.
Also hear what you think might be this like ice opening of realizing it was ice. Like sometimes it's a conversation. Sometimes it's a hard moment in your life, I guess.
It depends on how ready we are. If
cannot break it for others.
Well, no, not point. For others, but for self. I'm thinking when you're deep in survival, only pain will do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's
only pain. I mean, if you look at it, only when I'm like deep in fear,
thank you, Mitra.
Only something
A pain
Painful
will do
would
it.
break the ice.
But
Yes.
when I am out of that survival, or at least out is not a like that like I'm out of it. It's like not mainly living in fear in survival. When there's a little bit of choice there, then those are the aha moments. A flower will tell me, a scene will tell me, a child will tell me. So those are, it depends on where I am. Here, only pain speaks to me and awakens me. Here, like there are other things. And then when, I mean, the next step is eternalism. We talked about it. So when I'm in eternal, everything awakens me. The smell of this bad smell, the good smell. In Buddhism, my teacher used to tell me they used to take them to graveyards every month. You have to understand what that means. It's not like these fancy cemeteries that we have in the Western world. The graveyards for Buddhists are, they basically throw the body used to into nature and allow animals to eat it. The same way we eat the cows and other animals, our body becomes the food for. So graveyard that they were describing was quite a scene. I mean, you see bodies like eyes has gone, the hand has gone, the finger is eaten. And I know everybody goes like this, but that was a beautiful way of reminding them that this body is temporary. What is important is what animates this body called soul. And for when you get to that stage, then everything, you don't need a reminder like that. Everything is impermanence. Everything is beautiful. Everything is permanent in its impermanence of this world, world, not this world. And it's a play. But in survival, fear. I get sick. I'm diagnosed with this and that. And then I awaken. Sorry, go ahead.
No. And then in survival, you need to break the ice. And I'm just figuring that if you are in eternalist, you're basically all of it. You are the ice, you are the sky, and you are the deep water, and you're okay. You need no need to break anything.
Yes, you just see it. You just see it. All right. Yeah. Thank you. I'm going to let Hilda speak. She hasn't, but go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Mitra. It was a wonderful day, wonderful session. I just want, because of the end of the session, I just want to tell you what spoke to me. I'm struggling between my kids. There's an issue right now. And when you said, just say it and then get out of the way, I think I got that from this whole 2 hours. And it just, thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Thank you.
I said, sometimes the best thing to do is nothing to do.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We can stay longer. As I said, it's 90 minutes or 120 minutes, depending on if you want to stay longer. Minu has a question. We're going to let her. If you have to leave, you can leave, Hilda, John. But Minu, go ahead.
Thank you. This engaging rather than entangling, for the sake of our lesson today, is that one of them being survivalist and the other one being attentionist, is that how you can explain it? Can you give me examples of engaging with the world, not with the world or entangling with the world? And also, again, for the sake of the lesson today, we cannot be attentionist all the time and we cannot be survivalist at the time. So I think we should choose how often we can be survivalist and how often we can be attentionist. So it's in, if yesterday I was 10 decisions that I made was based on survivalist, I will try next month, next week, tomorrow to make that less survivalist and more attentionist. So it fluctuates, goes up and down. It's not absolute survivalist decisions or attentionist decision, even if it's the same subject, for example, for my child subject or whatever, it could be, hopefully it gets better, but it's not absolute. One day could be attentionist, the other day could be survivalist. Is that right? And the engagement and entanglement, if you can explain a little bit.
So let me separate the two questions. The first question is about
give some examples about engagement and entanglement. Let me go with that first. So engagement means I'm interested, curiosity. If I had to choose one word to define it, it's curiosity. Engagement is like, I wonder, how is that? Oh, that's interesting. Let me watch that. Entanglement has judgment. So I have an agenda. I come in, even when I sound like I'm curious, that's when I call questioning with an agenda. It sounds like I'm just saying, Minu, did you do this? But I really have an agenda. I want to say you didn't do it. So I say, did you do that you were supposed to do? I know you didn't, but I have an agenda. But sometimes I'm truly curious. So if you only saw it, either am I curious or do I have an agenda and judgment about it? That will really allow it to unfold for you. The other example is, for instance, when I am watching something and I'm seeing something I don't like, do I have a craving to convert everyone? That's entanglement. The craving to convert and convince and win an argument, that is entanglement. But the craving to clarify and explain for the purpose of clarification, I have no desire for the outcome. You may, after everything I explained, you say, Mitra, that sounds good. Go and live your life like that. Doesn't work for me. I'm okay with that. In fact, I go into each teaching class knowing that most people may think that if they don't say it, that they're going to say, yeah, but she doesn't understand my life and my this and my child that and my spouse this and my community that. So that's the difference. I'm not attached to the outcome. I truly want to know, and I am okay with whatever it's going on. You know that because you have experienced that you go in and you truly are okay. You're asking a question. Even when you're suggesting something, you're suggesting not like you became in charge of an organization. I heard that you became president of a charitable organization. Okay. So now you probably, what happens usually, because I've done a lot of board work, that the new board member or president comes in and sees all the things that have gone wrong. Okay. The person who's entangled wants to prove to you how bad other people have done it. You know what they've done? They created this and they did this. So it's all about criticism of the board members that actually brought the organization to where it is, right? But the enlightened president or board member, new board member, wants to really know, can you tell me how it was done? Oh, okay. I actually have an idea. I think maybe there's other ways of doing this. So the desire is for improvement, not for showing that how wrong the previous members have done it, because they probably have done their best. And obviously their best wasn't satisfactory to you. And that's fine. This is your opportunity. Don't get entangled with them. Get engaged with your own responsibility that can take you. Why are you hitting yourself? Did you do that? She's going like this.
I didn't know how to ask that question, but you answered the question that I didn't know how to ask. Wow. Yeah.
That was the reason you were exactly thinking about the board?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Sure. As if you were in our meetings. I didn't even know how to ask that question.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what you do. What you do is you bring a new, fresh way of doing things. That's beautiful. That's why we change in democracy. We change people so that new, fresh people come, but not at the price of saying how bad the other people are. If you see something that needs improvement, go improve. But when you get entangled, you just want to prove how wrong they are and how right you are, and how the bad, good, wrong, right. It's sort of, that's the language and the pattern for the entanglement. Great. Yeah. Yes, Nikki.
Yeah, I just have a question to that, because I was on a board, this is about 10 years ago, and the past president who did a lot of things that were not right, was part of the board, and she was still undermining what the new board president was doing, which was the right thing to do to straighten out records and things like that. And she kept undermining it. So how do you deal with someone like that who continually just bashes what the new president is doing? And you're trying to support the new president because you know that's the right way to do things. Especially getting books straightened out that had never been straightened out. And there were a lot of issues that we found out where she was spending money she shouldn't have been. Any new suggestion was she was always talking behind everybody's back and trying to make the new president look horrible.
Yeah, not engage. I mean, when people start talking behind somebody's back, I say, "Oh, sorry, I gotta go. I'm really thirsty." And it's amazing. Or bathroom, as you know, my office.
Well, I
Gotta go to
understand.
the bathroom. But joking aside, what I want to say is, where is your attention? If you're paying more attention to how wrong she is, then you're supporting her. If your attention is how right the new person is doing, then you're supporting them. Remember, that's the currency. So I would just like, I mean, it's amazing what we can do by discounting. I mean, I want you to just pay attention to that. That I'm going to just like, I heard the most ridiculous thing and I just like, oh, okay. Yeah. Now, on that subject, I have a question. So my attention goes to something that is of value to me. And if just remember, if three board members did that, the person eventually either goes quiet or becomes the background noise. It's like the music playing. It's okay. It can play. But what we're doing is we're paying attention to that. So by not engaging with that person and not paying attention to that person and gathering and focusing all of your attention on what needs to be done, the question always is, what do you see of value? That's where your attention needs to be. That's the answer. And believe me, I've been in another life, I was so active on boards because everywhere I moved to, and Lord knows I've moved to many cities, I become involved in like boards and charities and all of that. So there were a lot of incidents that I had to work with. And to a degree, I remembered one board member who was the background noise or should have been a background noise in my view, came to me and said, "It's almost like you don't hear me when I make comments. You never say what I say." I say, "I hear you, but I'm focusing on something else." And that was my answer. So the person actually recognized the fact that he says something, but I don't even engage. And I was the new, whatever they call it, president. That title alone bothers me, but okay. So I was the president. I just said, "No, I hear you." But that was the past. You keep talking about the past. We're talking about what to do for the next year. So I'm planning the next year. He said, "Okay." And then it was interesting how little he contributed after that. Just simple. I never fought. I never argued. I never said you were wrong. I never said you did this and that. I just realized that's not where my attention goes. I wanted to hear from the people who were receiver of the services, not a person who has an imaginary, illusionary actually way of thinking how the things should be, That's my suggestion. Hope it's helpful. Stephen.
Yes, thanks, Mitra. I clicked on the raise hand thing while you were still talking. Apologies for
That's
that.
okay.
This has been wonderful, and it's really pulling a lot of things together, like I mentioned, that I experienced for 3 days at that conference. And one of the things was, they talked a lot about the difference between extrinsic and intrinsic motivations. And I thought during those discussions about the inner and the outer that you talk about. And I also thought about the idea of internalizing. And on the meditation practices I've been doing for decades and decades, we hear the same sort of teaching stories over and over and over again. And you go, yeah, I've heard that, And there's a difference between like looking at things from an external point of view and internalizing what's being taught. And so I think a lot of the examples that you've given and others, like there's outer circumstances, and then you might say there's extrinsic rewards and punishments that kind of match with that, either that an adult is giving to a child or a teacher to a student or whatever. But that maybe in some ways, even externally, that life is applying to us. And then there's the internal, and your example of being a child and going up on the rooftop to talk to God during a storm, that seems like a perfect example of internalizing something, and that they're not completely separate. They have an impact, like on others. And but I don't know if you could say something about that process of internalizing anything, because like in our when the way we have to communicate with each other is very external. We're saying things that could be recorded or written or transcribed or whatever, and you could read that, and that's a really different thing than if you actually internalize what's being taught.
Yeah, I think the best way for me, I only understand things that are simple. The best way for me is to exactly how I said it, the inner and outer world, or the visible and invisible world. So when I am speaking, when I'm connecting, especially in a group, that's a lot of physical world, a lot of this world. And then where is the invisible world? What's happening in invisible world? So my attention is on both most of the time, and I when I forget my invisible world, I get entangled in the visible world. And when I have my attention on the invisible, it becomes easier to engage in the world. Because I'm, and by invisible, it could be just how I'm feeling inner world. It could be higher purpose. It depends on where my consciousness is at in that moment. It could be, the collective consciousness, higher self. It could be so many things. But as long as there is this outer and inner, the visible, invisible, because we forget there is an invisible world. That's where imagination comes from. That's where creation comes from. That's where elevation comes from. That's where unity comes from. And it's so easy because it's not right in your face to forget that. It's like people, a lot of people will listen to this audio recording. Now I see that a lot of people who don't come to our meetings are listening. So it's so easy for me to not think about them because they're not here, but I can see all your faces, all the people that are here. I remember you, but I need to also be speaking to them. I need to also like say that I did this with my hand because I say, see, as if like everybody's watching me. It's that invisible world allows us to stay rooted in the visible world. And that's very important to really remember. And like I forgot to answer the second part of Minu's question, which was do we need to plan to be here in survival and attention, which is really the visible invisible world? No, it's not so much planning, it's reminding ourselves. It's not like, oh, 20 minutes now visible and like 30 minutes invisible. It's not like that. It's just holding both. At the same time, the moment I go into fear, I realize I've been too involved in the visible world. I know because it is fear creating, producing this world that we live in. But the moment I go to, this is just temporary, we've come to learn and we're all connected. Doesn't matter how they sound, they're gonna also arrive at awakening place. Then my whole body relaxes. Then the invisible is helping my visible world, but entanglement with this visible world, it is impossible not to be in an anxious mode, in a difficult, fearful place. It is impossible to not be in survival mode and listen to all the news of the world. It's just impossible. You need to be really God, I suppose, to do that, if you believe in it. But as a human being, the only way that I have been able to do it is that I remember my invisible powers, potentials, imagination, connection in order to really work with this very, very fast-paced, unusual physical world that we're living in. I mean, these are not, look at the history, no time we've been in this place. It's amazing. But it's only amazing when I'm connected to my invisible. You call it whatever you want to call it. Yeah, as a child, it was my God. I mean, there were a lot of difficulties as I was growing up, a lot. But that world, and I didn't know I was doing it. I mean, I didn't do it intentionally, but that world allowed me to go through life in a completely different way. Now I hear people that I grew up with talking about these problems that I was involved in, but somehow I was protected. I didn't experience it the way they experienced it. Same thing, but a completely different version of it for me. I suppose because I had the backing of that world was part of my world, and that probably made it easier for me. So I tried to copy and paste what happened in my childhood. I really wondered, Stephen, for the longest time, I didn't have a happy childhood, but I was such a happy child and happy adult. What made me so happy? I always wondered because everybody's looking for this happiness. I couldn't tell you all the difficulty. I mean, you still are hearing new things that I've gone through after all these years. I mean, Minu has been with me probably 12 years. Every time we're in a session, she hears a new bad news and bad event that I went through. But why, what am I so happy? Am I ignoring them? Am I just happy-go-lucky? No, I've thought about all of these. It's just there was another world, there was another point of reference. And that point of reference is what makes this physical world much, much, much easier to go through and not be entangled with. I don't know if this was helpful.
No, that was really helpful, Mitran. And to give it a really dry spin, this is what the pedagogy of care people say too, that the actual learning happens in an inner environment when students internalize the topic, when they're given choice over how to learn. And the way to kill that off is by providing external rewards and punishments. And I think that that person in the concentration camp in World War II, Fritz, I forget what his last name is, but the man's search for meaning, it was like it's our search for meaning, which only happens internally, allowed him to escape the external horror of being in a Nazi concentration camp, right? So I think that's how you've maintained happiness too, is by finding that internal world and occupying it.
And that's where the knowledge and knowing, remember we made a difference, differentiated between these two. Knowledge is what the outside of us is teaching us. Knowing is what we have access to. And we kill the knowing at the price of knowledge. And I mean, we meaning the institutions do. Like asking, that's why I keep saying to everybody, ask instead of tell. Ask them, how is it? How does it feel? How is, tell me more. Like showing curiosity is the key to awakening that deeper knowing. You know, you really do. We all say it. When things go bad, we say, deep down, I knew. Oh, if there is a deep down somewhere, why can't I connect with that deep down before I screw up my life? Before I really lose everything, I say, ah, I knew. Usually it's said after you've lost everything. Deep down, I knew I shouldn't invest with this person. Deep down, I knew I shouldn't go with this relationship. Okay, so if that deep down exists, why don't you consult with it before you make that investment and start that relationship? Because we've been taught not to. Because we've been taught to say thank you, the person who holds the door is the right person who wears the most beautiful, elegant clothing. That's the right person, not the person who sits there and say hi. And we connect to. Is it like, oh yeah, let me check their shoes. It wasn't that clean, their shoes and run down.
We're not very practiced at going deep down. We don't go there very often, so that when we do say that, it's an unfamiliar world that we're referring to.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I know I was encouraged to come out and not dream. That's why I kept it a secret. It's amazing how much knowing we have. Children create worlds that they can survive in, but then if they are given the opportunity, if they're not completely screwed up by us, then they can also find their thriving experiences in there too. It's not just surviving. Great discussion today. Yes, Christine. No, not Christine, Kristen. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Well, you are muted. Today, you are finding it difficult to unmute yourself.
Sorry, I don't know why.
Maybe there's a message there. Go ahead.
Can you talk a little bit more about, you referenced that it's hard not to be in survival mode with the news and everything that's going on. Can you talk about like some practical steps, when I am hearing the news and I'm having a hard time processing it? Or I think another time that I find challenging is when I'm in a conversation with other people, and then it's almost as if like that reactivates. It's like every we kind of go into like all the very survival terrible things, and then I find myself even more in a survival state. So I guess I'm just curious if you have any suggestions on those two things.
Yeah. Remember the observation deck in the lessons? Yeah. I don't know if everybody in the group right now has arrived at that, but there's a place in our mind that allows us to see things from a much different angle, from a higher place. We call it observation deck. And that is as soon as your body and your body talks to you, the moment you're contracting in your body, that means you have stayed too much with your focus in the outside world and you need to take it to the observation deck. Observation deck allows you to see, basically, observation deck, here it is, secrets out, is the inner and outer world. It's the visible and invisible world. That's where you see both. So imagine you're standing at this, you're not just seeing the land, you're also seeing the sky. You also are seeing the potentiality. So, in your mind, imagine as soon as you see that your body is contracting, that you can take it to observation deck and see the bigger picture of life. This is history in the making. There is always balance. The whole life, the whole earth, every cell in every body is seeking balance. And sometimes we go extreme to this way, and sometimes we go extreme to that way. But eventually, everything is seeking balance. And nothing is permanent. We look at these days and we think, oh my God, what are we going to do? This too will pass, and not in a way that we don't need to do anything about it. But in that sense, when we let go of this grip of, oh my God, then a lot of ideas of what I can do comes to you. The other thing is to really value your attention. How much attention? Okay, I got it. I got it. You want to know enough, like I want to read the news. I want to hear people's, opinions, especially if it's very different than mine. That's a world that I want to know. Because remember, I'm not entangled. I am engaged. I want to know. It's not that I don't want to know. No, I do want to know. But just for knowing, that's all. I don't need to convert them. The moment you resign from the position of wanting to change them, then your grip will be much, much tolerable. And the other thing you can do is to ask yourself, what gives me joy right now? Let go and find your joy. It could be having a hot cup of tea. It could be writing a letter. It could be calling a loved one. But give yourself joy, because it's very difficult to sit there and listen to the things that are difficult for you to hear. It's very, very difficult, So find ways. There's so many ways you can do it. It's not one way, but just know there is a way, and just know that it's okay. It's okay. Power is like a very entertaining person who likes to have many experiences. Every night it goes and sleeps with a new person. Power always has been like that. Sometimes it sleeps with people that we like. Sometimes power sleeps with people we don't like, and that's fine. It's okay. No problem. Nothing is wrong. Nothing is going wrong. You just need to do what is right for you. That's all. All right. I think
Thank
we had a really good session today. Very satisfied. It's like yum, yum. Now let's go and feed our bodies. I'm hungry. And great to see you all. Are you good? I know Maria didn't have any questions and Cynthia arrived late. Are you guys good? Anything you want to ask? Okay. Okay, good. All right. The only thing I need to say that March, is it 9th? That it's on Sunday. I won't be here. I will be traveling. I don't know why Chris is smiling, but Chris is doing something. He has invited me to out of town and Hendy and I are going. So I won't be able to be here with you on March 9th, but before and after is fine. See you next time. Let's unmute and say goodbye. Thank you for your presence and thank you for beautiful contributions today. It fed my soul. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.